come up and speak with this group, a group that I've held pretty high in my career. A lot of my mentors sitting in the crowd that have taught me a lot around beef cattle production. And so it's an honor to be able to visit with you about a project, a team that I was asked to co-lead a couple years ago with Nebraska Extension. Nebraska Extension went through an ordeal with visiting and doing some things with getting information from our stakeholders that are issues within the state of Nebraska. And that issue that this team revolves around is consumer confidence. What does consumer confidence mean? And so they brought together a diverse team of extension specialists, educators, assistants to deal with this whole idea behind consumer confidence. And so when I was asked to lead that team, we kind of looked at, okay, so who are these people that are going to be involved? So this team I lead is about 65 individuals. Most of those are dietitians. So you can look at me and think about me walking into a room with about 8 ag people, about 20 4-H youth educators, and the remainder of them are dietitians. Okay, the first thing pretty puts me in kind of an uncomfortable spot, okay, because I don't like dietitians anyway, okay? And then I got to talking with them. I said, in my world, we call you guys nutritionists. And they kind of looked at me and they said, no, we're dietitians. So all of you nutritionists out there, now I'm calling you my cow dietitians now. So you guys are going to have to get used to that conversation. But when we think about consumer confidence, 98% of our U.S. consumers have been removed from agriculture. They don't know what agriculture is. When we look at it, they see the lights of the urban setting, what they know. They see animal care and welfare by their pets or by their trip to the zoo. When they look at agriculture, it gets pretty gray. They don't know what we do on a daily basis. What we do to take care of animals might not seem like the proper thing to do for them, but they don't know because they've been removed those generations from that farm and ranch connection. So when we look at it, they also get to go to the grocery store, go to the meat counter. It used to be pretty simple. You went to the meat counter and what did you do? You bought a ribeye. You bought a T-bone. You bought ground beef. Today, you can get any quality grade you want, prime, choice, select. You can get the cut of meat that you want. But now you see labels as no hormones added, non-hormone, antibiotic-free, grass-fed, grain-fed, humanely raised. What do they all mean? There's a lot of confusion out there when you look at this, and that's what this team really started to look at is, does anybody know what all these mean? Does anybody in here know of any beef that is non-hormone? Does anybody know of any living organism that's non-hormone? It's the challenge that we face on a daily basis. And so that's why this team kind of got together and they decided we need to do a survey of households to figure out what influences them to purchase the food, but also what their concerns are and where they get their information. Because we saw all kinds of information out there, but the first thing we thought is, oh, that's the highly populated urban areas. Nebraska is a rural ag state. We shouldn't have these issues here. So we looked at what factors influence these people to purchase their food. First thing they said, and we heard it from Jim Robb. We also heard it in the BQA audit, okay, the National Quality Audit. Eating satisfaction is number one by far. 95% said that was their reason for picking food. The second one is cost, and the third one was nutritional value. When you think about that, is anything up here about allergens? Is anything up here about antibiotics? No. So what are they doing market-wise with those marketing strategies to change this purchase influencers? So now let's look at a national survey done by the International Food Information Council. They did pretty much the same survey question-wise, except theirs is a lot more in-depth. We took three questions. They have about 50. But when we looked at that, I know there's a pointer here somewhere. We're looking at the blue and green lines now. So their top one, again, was taste, price, and healthfulness, which we equate something similar to nutritional value. Their fourth one is convenience. And ours, our fourth one, was convenience of purchase location. 55% of our millennials have convenience of purchase number one. So a little different, because that's going to be the big population that we're trying to feed in the future, or currently do. So again, we thought national information, statewide information, it doesn't matter where we are, we have these people in our backyard. When we look at concerns, we started talking about allergens. We started talking about antibiotic use, humanely raised, those type of scenarios. The number one thing all consumers are concerned with, shouldn't be a surprise, is foodborne illness. They're worried about E. coli and salmonella. Always have been, always will be. But then they start talking about chemicals in their food, whether it be natural or contaminated. Then they looked at carcinogens and pesticide residues. Those were the top four they're concerned with. Now, if you look at all the concerns we have up there, including allergens, things like gluten-free, at least 50% of all those surveys still say it's a big concern. But it didn't raise to the top of the list. But when we look at allergens, 5% of adults have food allergies. Another 8% of youth have food allergies. And less than 2% of the people have been diagnosed with celiac disease for gluten-free. But what's the big push? Gluten-free. Okay, it's out there. And so, again, we thought, so what's it saying nationally? The same thing. We got foodborne illnesses, carcinogen, chemicals in food, and pesticides were their top four. The same topic. The same type of question. Now, when we looked at this, we also looked over here, and we have 56% of the people surveyed said there's conflicting information out there about all these marketing ploys and all these labels. 56%. The other thing that's amazing is 35% of millennials are not confident in the U.S. food supply. 24% of baby boomers are not confident in the food supply. So, yes, there's an issue there. How do we get over that issue? We have to figure out where these people are getting their information. Basically, if you would put social media and websites in there, online presence is number one. No surprise, right? The second one is the food label. Whatever's on that label each and every time they go to the grocery store. They look at that. Number three, friends and family. Friends and family. How many of you ask a family member or friend what you should purchase at a grocery store? Anybody? Probably not many of us in this room. So now let's look at nationally, the same thing occurs. Number one person they get their information from is a health professional. We getting asked about healthcare professionals in ours, but I assume it would raise to the list. But the second one on their list is friends and family. 38% of millennials get their information from friends and family and multiple sources of friends and family is their number one. So again, where do we need to be? What do we need to talk about? So bottom line, taste, eating satisfaction is still the number one driver. Price, getting the best value is number two. Then when we look down, of course, nutrition and health is important. Consumers are concerned with all food safety labels. But then as we go down, I want to kind of go down to this bottom one. Consumers get their information online, or the other big one is friends and family. So what does that mean to us? Pretty simple. We need to start telling our story. Remember, 98% of our consumers remove from agriculture. That leaves the 2% of us to tell our story. If we don't tell our story, who will? Who will tell our story? And is it the right story? I would ask you that. Is it the right story? I think this is probably where we get into how do we do this, except communication and transparency. If you look at the quality audit information and you really dive into the executive summaries, you will see there's a need for transparency across the board in all sectors. But we need to also communicate with our consumers. Most of the time when we have conversations with our consumers, this problem occurs. The biggest communication problem is we do not listen to understand, we listen to reply. Because usually if we have somebody coming at us about how we do things, what's the first thing we want to do? We want to kind of respond to them pretty quickly with a lot of facts. We want to push that their thought process down pretty quick. But we don't listen to understand that they don't know why we do those things. They don't know why we use antibiotics judiciously. They don't know why we're out there caring for these animals, rain, snow, shine. They don't know those things. Having cattle in a feed yard, a confined unit, is that a bad thing? To a lot of consumers, it looks like it. But those animals are probably cared for as well or better than a lot of pets in their own household because they are taken care of every day, given an exact ration every day, looked at for health every day. But they don't understand that. So that's where we have to be able to listen to try to relate that information back from the things that we know. Everybody knows what this is, right? It's a flight zone. Dr. Temple Grandin, this is the idea of handling. It's the principle that we've used in a lot of stockmanship, BQA trainings. We all know how to use this, right? There's a flight zone. There's a blind spot. There's a balance point. We can make that animal do things by utilizing how to understand that flight zone. It's a comfort zone, right? A lot of us, our comfort zone, when we start talking about talking to consumers, we get outside of our comfort zone. That's probably why a lot of us do what we do. My job, talking to you as producers, that's my comfort zone. Going to talk to that group of dietitians, usually not my comfort zone. Okay? All of us have that. All of us would probably rather be out on a horse checking cows. Or AIing. Our calving, our feeding. That's our comfort zone. But what do I like to talk about? Those things that we're usually comfortable about. These are the things that you would find on my Facebook account. As Dr. Crable had mentioned, I had to do a little modification here, I have to admit. My fiance's name came up on here, and I'm always getting the battle at home. You care more about cows and beef than you do about me and my and the things here at home. Because guess what? Cattle and beef were a lot bigger than her name on this chart. And that's how you determine how many times I say this on Facebook. The bigger it is, the more times I say it. So we had to do some modification before she looked at my slide set the other night. That way she didn't see that, to have some proof that I probably say more things about cattle and beef than I do about her and our grandson on this on my Facebook account. But again, these are the things that are important, because this is what I'm comfortable in talking about. If you would do something like this with, if you're on social media, or even think about it, just having conversations, how different would your food or would your word cloud be? You're probably pretty comfortable in talking about things that you do every day, right? Pretty passionate about it. I would admit that. So this is what I did. I said, we have a flight zone. That flight zone is pretty simple. These things down here are the things we like to talk about. Husbandry. We heard Pam Olson talk about stewardship. Stewardship of the land, of the animals, of those resources. Pretty excited about those things, aren't we? We're pretty passionate about it. I can talk to each one of you individually, and I bet you I could tell that pretty quickly, what your passion areas are. But we also have this balance point. We can talk about those things in front of us that we can see. We can handle those things, but we have a big blind spot. It might be the Humane Society of the U.S., HSUS. It might be PETA. It might be people fighting you about antibiotic resistance. It might be you guys use too much hormones. You use too many antibiotics. They're fighting us on that backside. But how do we communicate? Communicate with the things that we know over here on this side. That's that balance that we have to learn. One of the things, this is an example. I go to a couple barbers right there in Gearing, Nebraska. Two great young gentlemen. And one of them usually is the one I go to the most often. The other one has a chair right next to him. And one day I was in there, and they found out what I did. And we were talking about the things that I did and what I'm involved with, things that I like. We talked about wrestling. We talked about athletics. We talked about the importance of, you know, nutrition in wrestling and that whole scenario. And then all of a sudden, the one looked at me and said, well, you know, McDonald's has the safest beef because it doesn't have any antibiotics in it. Okay, my first thought is, wow, this is in Gearing, Nebraska. We have cattle all around Gearing, Nebraska. Why would these guys not understand this? And he went on and on and was really going on about how bad we were doing things. And finally, I had to go back and I said, wait, let's talk about simple health and nutrition. Our common link was wrestling. And his son is a wrestler. And we talked about protein, and that beef is a good source of protein and iron. And that with withdrawal times and how we use antibiotics, there is no antibiotics in meat, no matter what it is. He remembers this to this day. Now, the ironic thing, his partner in the chair next to him knows that I work for the university, and he asks me every time I go in there, when is the University of Nebraska going to start doing research on hemp? Because when Nebraska legalizes hemp production, he wants to be in the forefront. And I'm like, whoa, worrying about antibiotics? Not worrying about, but that's another story, okay? But it threw me off guard. But again, it's how we have those conversations that really make things happen for all of us. But we have to make those conversations by the things that we know. There's a lot of ways of getting this information. I believe we need to know the facts and we need to know the science behind what we do. That's why we're here. We need to know those things. Things like the Masters of Beef Advocacy that NCBA puts out. Excellent program. gives you a lot of facts, a lot of talking points. Your beef councils. A lot of BQA coordinators have websites that put a lot of information up on there. The University Extension, again, a lot of great information about the facts and the science. And these are just the ones from Nebraska that I know. I know all the other states are involved and have some of those type of things. But the other one down here is ag advocacy groups. Troy Hagrig was here yesterday and presented. Him and Stacy have advocates for agriculture. Again, great resources to utilize within our region. Cause matters. Michelle Payne spoke with this group 2 years ago in Loveland. Another great resource. Use the resource, but all of us are on the same page, I believe. We need to talk about what we know and what we do. Don't bury the consumers in the science. A couple years ago, heading to San Antonio to NCBA. My flight got delayed in DIA. Two middle-aged Christian women going to a Christian women's function in San Antonio as well was sitting there next to me there in the terminal. We started talking. They asked why I was going. I asked why they were going. And when I talked to them about working with cattlemen, the first comment out of their mouth was, "Is it true you make cattle breed out of season?" Guys, got that? You make cattle breed out of season. Well, the first thing that came to my mind is I could bury him in talks about estrus synchronization, GnRH, prostaglandin, MGA, Seegers. I could bury him in all that, right? Thanks, Dr. Funskin, for making those all in my mind. That way I can remember those. But those are things that we know, and we can bury them in that science. But what are they going to do as soon as we start burying them in the science? They're going to stop listening to us. So my discussion there was, it's all about being a part of a cattle operation. It's about resources, whether it be feed resources, labor resources. That's why we choose to breed cattle to calve at a certain time of year. It's based on our resources and that stewardship of the land, of the resources, and of the cattle, and of our family. Again, talk about what we know. Remember the science, incorporate the science, but don't bury them in. We also need to find the common ground. I find the common ground with my barbers wrestling. I found the common ground with these women going to San Antonio as we were both going to San Antonio. They were a little upset we had delay. It was part of the game. But again, these are things that might be about your family. Okay? It might be about your pet. It might be about common values. These are the things we link to each other. We continually link to each other with common values. Now, right now, my common value with a lot of people in Nebraska that I can start a conversation with is this picture down here in the lower corner, because we're still waiting for a frost in Memorial Stadium. So those are things I can start that conversation at that point. I should put up my old alma mater, University of Wyoming. I probably would have had a little bit more success this year than where I was. But again, these are the things that we talk about. My ineffective cow dog. Okay. Kurt Pate talks about effective cattle movement and handling. This cow dog is pretty ineffective. So again, those are the things. Find the common ground. In those discussions, by having that common ground and that commonality of values, we build trust. That trust is very important, because then we can have these conversations in a very calm manner where we can listen and we can be honest and we can have that transparency about the things that we know and do each and every day. Tell our story. Don't tell anybody else's. Tell our story. Tell your story. And don't bury them in the science, because you'll lose the trust pretty quick. Telling your story, talk about your operation. Talk about why it's important to your family. We talked about transitioning to the next generation, that's important. All of us in this room feel that's important. That's why we do the things that we do. You may be somebody that produces all natural, organic. You might be antibiotic free. You might not use implants. It's your decision. It has to be about your operation. But you have to have that value of why you do it, and you have to relay that to our consumers because they don't understand it. They don't understand it. Know the nanograms of estrus or estrogen in a 3-ounce steak with implants without, or 3 ounces of cabbage. Know those, but you don't have to bury them, man. You have to talk about it. You have to discuss it. So again, don't bury them in the science, but the last thing I have up here, tell your story. There's room for all of us in this industry. No matter what your production is, we all have a place in this industry. Instead of putting each other, fighting each other, we need to look at it as we're all in the same boat of being selling our product to consumers. And there's room no matter what our production choice is. There's room for all of us. I guarantee you in niche markets, I don't think if you have a niche market that's selling all natural or organic, you don't want all of us to jump in your niche market. The value change is pretty quick. But there is room for all of us in all of our industry. There really is. So basically, know the facts. Don't bury them in the science. Find the common goals, the common values, those common interests, and share those to have an open, honest discussion about food and how food is raised to build that confidence level. Keep them in mind when we have those discussions that they have not been on a farm, ranch, or a feed yard. We have to start from square one. But tell your story. Tell your story. I'd like to challenge you, each one of us, to have 2 of these conversations with consumers a month. That's 24 conversations in the next year. That's pretty easy, right? It's not that many. If we each had 2 conversations, and we encourage those people to each have 2 conversations with their friends and family. This is windshield math, okay, so bear with me. In a year, we could reach, each one of us could reach just over 6,000 consumers. Okay? I'm not a mathematician. I do have a degree in ag economics as a bachelor's degree. But I kind of lost my perspective, so I went more animal science after that. So, again, that's not too bad, 6,000. Say the average attendance at this conference is 800. I don't know what it is. I don't know where we are right now, but say it's 800 participants. If we, all 800 of us, took this challenge, in 1 year, we could reach 4.9 million consumers. Before the next Range Cow Symposium, we could reach 9.8 million people. Is that a lot of people? A lot of consumers? Definitely, definitely. But we need to build their confidence in the U.S. food supply, in every piece of the U.S. food supply. And all of you in this room can do that. We all have to do it. We can't count on our neighbor to do it all. We can't count on Extension, our advocate organizations, our cattlemen's associations to do it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. Because together, in our numbers, we can reach more people by all of us sharing in this communication. So it's time to go tell our story. I love beef. You can tell I love beef. I'll always love beef. And I hope each and every one of you do as well. My information is here. Be glad to visit with you this evening. When we hit our bullpen sessions, sometimes probably some bull sessions as well. But again, happy to be here. Glad for the invitation. And I'll look forward to questions later on.